Welcome to the O Collective Just Like You podcast. We are Diana, Lisi, Simona, and Eden. As third culture kids, we were never taught about intimacy, relationships, and sex. That is precisely why we created the O Collective. Listen to our podcast to learn what your parents or teachers never taught you about better sex, intimacy, relationships, and overall health.
Hey, Stacey.
Hello.
Hi, O Collective.
So we got in touch with you because Wincy just got diagnosed with endometriosis, and we've been Googling a lot on the internet, but we also know a couple of our friends, one of us is you, also went through the experience of endometriosis and all of the effects with it. So we would love to catch up with you and hear your insights, learn from what you have learned, and see what we can actually do ourselves to make sure we're fully prepared.
Happy to do so, Wincy. I'm very sorry to hear that. I know what you're going through. So hopefully, yeah, some of this conversation maybe is even helpful to you personally, because it's still, for whatever reason, one of those things that not many people have heard of. And so not many people talk about.
I have to admit, after the doctor told me about it, I kind of stuck my hand into the sand. And I was like, I'm just going to take it slow, read up about it, because I actually don't know anything about it. And I actually also don't know that many people with it. So it was actually great that Simona mentioned that you went through the entire experience, and to also hear a little bit more from you and learn a little bit more from you.
Hey, Stacey, can you give a little bit of an introduction of yourself?
I'm Stacey Tarver Patterson. I am 37 years old, which sounds very weird to say that I am very squarely in middle age at this point. I grew up in New Jersey, moved to New York to go to college, and that is where I was first diagnosed at NYU Hospital. So I was an athlete growing up, and I think, you know, part of being trained as an athlete and wanting to be the best athlete you can be runs counter to listening to your body in a lot of ways. And so although I was 20 years old when I was diagnosed with endometriosis, and even when I like first heard the word endometriosis, I realized at that point, and have realized through the years since then, that I was definitely experiencing the symptoms of endometriosis as early as age 12. So I grew up an athlete, have worked in business, you know, since school, really mostly in marketing, in sports mainly, because I loved my life as an athlete. But since then, have also gotten into startups like you guys, and have done a little time working in venture capital and as a startup founder. And yeah, and I live in New York now. I do a lot with Columbia, where I went for my graduate degree. And so try to stay in and around the New York entrepreneurial ecosystem.
Very impressive background and story from you, Stacey. And also, you're half Chinese as well, right?
Yeah, my mother is Chinese. My grandmother was born and raised in Beijing. My grandfather was born and raised in Shanghai. So we have a little bit of that rivalry going within my family. And then, yeah, my mother's Chinese. My father's Black. He's from Flint, Michigan. And they met here in New Jersey, where I'm sitting tonight.
Stacey, can you describe yourself, your intimate self, in three words?
I would say sensitive, definitely, as the first word, curious as the second word, and then guarded as the third word.
Guarded. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, and it's very related to everything that we're going to talk about.
Okay. I'm sure. We'll save that for later then.
Yeah.
So Stacey, before we start, would you like to maybe explain what endometriosis is in a really short sentence?
The way that it was described to me that made the most sense when I was diagnosed is that it's very similar to having your period, but internally, instead of the, you know, shedding of the uterine lining leaving your body, the shedding of the uterine lining is going into other places inside your body and wreaking havoc in a lot of ways. And so sometimes it can act, you know, a bit like the way cancer cells can, you know, grow very rapidly. It can attach itself to things, and then it sort of mimics the behavior of the tissue that it's attaching itself to, which can be very problematic for different organ systems and can cause a lot of pain.
How did you actually find out that you had endometriosis? You just shortly talked about it.
I always struggled with having a lot of pain, not even just in the time of my menstrual cycle, but just it, for me, it seemed all the time. So in the years leading up to my diagnosis, I really thought that I had some sort of GI issue. I didn't know to connect it to my reproductive cycle whatsoever. And then I think a little bit because of social stigma and coupled to the fact that my mother's Chinese and, you know, it's not within our family culture to talk about that time of the month or, you know, anything really related to sexual wellness. It was easier for me growing up to just say, oh, my stomach really hurts and like not go into any more detail than that. And I think that also trained me into not making certain connections that were happening. But I had symptoms, like I said, like as long as I can remember into my teenage years. One day that really stands out to me, I was a goalie on our soccer team in high school and we had a big game coming up. And I remember laying on the couch and just like, I thought I was dying. Like it was a level of pain that I had not experienced before. I had, you know, broken bones and, you know, done all the typical kind of like athlete things. And this was off the charts in comparison to those things. And so I was telling my mom, oh, you know, I don't really want to go to the game. I have my period. And she kind of gave me a slap and was like, you know, this is what you have to go through as a woman, like playing the game and your team needs you. And we just left it at that. And so I think those symptoms just, I learned to not talk about them until I was in college. I ran on the track team and my team had gone to a meet when I was a junior in college. I think we were at Cornell. It was somewhere in upstate New York and it was very cold. And I remember because it snowed and it took a really long time for our bus to get back to the city where I went to school. And at that meet, I was preparing to run the indoor heptathlon. And my coach, in preparation for that event, which was going to be at a meet later in the season, was having me run the mile. And mind you, I was a long and triple jumper and the mile was like way further than I was willing to run at that point in my life. And so I was really nervous about it, but I also was in a lot of pain. And I think my coach thought, oh, you know, she's just complaining and she's nervous about running this event that she doesn't normally participate in. But I was like experiencing something that I didn't know how to handle. So I went to the bathroom right before they were calling my event and I pulled down, you know, in college track, you wear those little like booty short kind of things, very tight spandex shorts. And so I pulled down my shorts and I remember just like seeing a water bottle sized amount of blood. Like my shorts were completely soiled. It like went on the floor. It was really bad. So our coach was a man and I didn't feel comfortable going to tell him what had just happened. So I went to the trainer that, you know, in the infield of the track, there was, you know, just like where the trainers are with like ice and Advil and, you know, kind of tape and the typical stuff. And I told the trainer for the school who was a woman, she handed me 6 Advil and was like, here, take this and you can be in your event. You'll be fine. I ran the mile, didn't run well. We got back to the city after the race and I went to sleep over at my boyfriend's dorm and was in just like such bad pain through the night that I ended up staying up all night while he was asleep in the little twin bed. And I was just like sitting in a chair, just trying not to wake him up, but also hoping that he would wake up and notice how much pain I was in. And first thing in the morning, I left and walked back to my apartment. And somewhere in between in that walk, I fainted because the pain was so bad. I don't know how much time I was out for, but lost a chunk of time in that day. And when I woke up, instead of calling 911 or calling an ambulance, I was so discombobulated. I had never passed out before. So I called my dad, who lived about an hour away at the time, and asked him if he would come into the city and then drive me to the hospital. Once I was at the hospital, they did an emergency laparoscopic surgery, and that's when they diagnosed me. And that's also the unfortunate thing about endometriosis. One, not many doctors know about it and are not as well trained as they could be about just assessing, well, first of all, listening to the patient accounts of symptoms, but also assessing based on patient accounts of systems, symptoms, and being able to make a diagnosis. The only gold standard way still to make a diagnosis of endometriosis is to do it through surgery and actually see it firsthand with your own eyes. And so that also, you know, when I woke up and they made the diagnosis, I was like, how is it that I've been complaining about this for years and years and I've gone to so many doctors and I've never even heard this word before. I just remember being like, did I wake up on another planet? Like, what's going on? It was a frustrating journey, but it was also a huge relief to finally have a diagnosis and, you know, be able to somewhat chart out a plan for myself based on what I now knew about what was going on.
How long did you walk around with these symptoms and pains before you actually went to the hospital?
When I was 12 years old, I had a pretty bad accident. I did gymnastics and the onset of my first period came when I was doing a standing backflip on the high beam and my feet missed the beam and I straddled the beam. And so it was like a blunt force trauma to my vagina. And I started bleeding at that point and that turned into my first period. So I even like my initial journey with getting my period was always sort of mixed up in pain and whatnot. But I, you know, from that moment on, just remember feeling like there is no way all of my friends are experiencing the same level of pain that I am each month when I get my period. And I knew from talking to them that theirs weren't as heavy as mine. You know, I would bleed for a solid 7 to 10 days and be, you know, changing tampons, like the largest size tampon every hour. And I knew a lot of my friends that didn't even need to really use tampons. I didn't go to a doctor about my symptoms until I was probably 16. And at 16, I went to like my childhood pediatrician who I had always seen. I remember he told me, oh, I think you just are doing too many sit-ups. Like you're, you know, you have really strong ab muscles, probably are just overworking yourself and you should, you know, not do so many sit-ups. I've seen obviously other doctors since then, but I've had a bunch of different, you know, just like wild rule out diagnoses along the way. Overtrained abs was the funniest though, and the most memorable.
That must be so frustrating. We recently went to a workshop and the workshop was on periods and they talked about the pain gap for women and men, and women are more prone to just hold in our pain and not be vocal about it, because like you said, oftentimes when we are vocal, people think we're complaining or people think we're not throwing a fit, or like comments like, oh, you're just hormonal, or you're just this, you're just that. Like, then the more you hear about it, the more you're like, oh, I don't want to talk about it anymore. And I can't imagine, like, you're an athlete, like, we're all athletes at some point in our lives here that, you know, especially having most coaches are male coaches. And then we immediately say, no, you can do it. You're an athlete. You better run this. Like, if not, then like, you know, you're off the team or something like that. Then, and you're expected to perform like a man, like a boy, like growing up. But yeah, our bodies are built so, so differently. But then at the same time, we have this expectation that physically and emotionally that we're supposed to be the same as well.
I actually just this morning sent to another friend of mine, there's a video on TikTok that someone in a book club I'm in sent to me, where there's, I guess, these like period pain simulators now. And so the video is her giving a presentation while her brother is wearing the simulator. And she's like trying to ask her brother to move forward with like, it's like a real estate presentation or something. And each time she's going up a level, up a level, up a level. And level 10 is meant to be, you know, like where you would be at peak pain during a period. I think he makes it to like level 8. And then he's like, I can't wear this anymore. Please get it off me. She was like, oh, so you're not going to go to work? And he's like, no.
So Stacey, going back to, you mentioned that a lot of doctors could not really diagnose you in the beginning. And it's funny because I kind of had very similar experiences with gynecologists here in China. There's always, they would always tell me, are you pooping well? Maybe it's because you're constipated, so that's why you're experiencing so much pain. And I'm like, I don't really think I'm constipated, but I'm really always feeling this sharp pain. Even the female gynecologist that were trying to diagnose me or look at what the issue was, I went through multiple doctors until I found a doctor that really knew about endometriosis and about chocolate cysts with women. And it really is something that a lot of doctors don't really know a lot about, even gynecologists. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's good to hear from other people what the signals are and what the signs are to look out for, because I'd be experiencing something and a lot of doctors might not be able to help you with what you're feeling and how your body is feeling. How was it treated for you? And did the doctors mention anything about how to prevent it?
There's no cure, and there really is no cure because doctors still don't agree on what the true cause is of endometriosis. There's kind of like, I've seen two dominant camps in terms of, you know, that it's genetic or that it's, you know, somehow related to like functions a little bit similarly to a lot of autoimmune diseases, which we know affect women more often than they affect men as well. And so there's definitely like some sort of social or epigenetic, I think this is again my theory, coding that's happening that is like almost priming people for this. But because there is no cause and no cure, it's really hard to say, you know, for me as a person, oh yeah, that must have been, you know, the moment that caused this whole thing or the reason why I have this condition. And I think in general too, one of the things that I've learned just through my experience navigating with endometriosis is that a lot of things related to our health and our bodies, we think about like their events and we want them to be like, oh, there's a distinct moment in time or something that happened to me that caused, you know, me to feel this way. And really, I think we mistake a lot of things that we want to try to fit into that mold that actually were processes that have been developing for a long time. And there is no one single like event that happened in our life that made, you know, all of this occur. So I'm no exception to that for sure. I actually like maybe a little bit differently from what you experienced, I did have a lot of bowel related symptoms of my endometriosis. And that's one of the things about endometriosis is that once that tissue sheds itself and, you know, goes to other places in your body, it can start to cause problems with the different areas where it lands, if you will. And so for me, I had a lot of disease tissue that was in and around my bowel. And there are certain years of my life where I was very constipated, and that because that was the most pressing or the most urgent top of mind symptom I was experiencing, I would navigate the healthcare system trying to alleviate that symptom and, you know, still wasn't connecting it back to a larger cause. I spent a lot of time going to GI doctors. I had probably 3 colonoscopies already by the time I turned 30, which is not normal. I had had 2 endoscopies also trying to, you know, diagnose me with various gastrointestinal diseases and symptoms. And the only thing that did come actually from having endoscopies before I got my endometriosis diagnosis is that I had gastritis, which is kind of like the precondition to having ulcers. But I had the gastritis because I had been taking so much Advil because I had so much pain from the endometriosis. So it is kind of all related. It was a really difficult journey and just, you know, you go to one doctor and they kind of don't know the answers, but doctors also don't have a great way of saying, I don't know. You know, again, everything needs to fit into what they're used to dealing with. And you as the patient, when that happens, end up just leaving feeling like crazy, like you're losing your mind. And so that kind of beats you down in a big way over the years. And I think I read somewhere that the average time to get an endometriosis diagnosis is something like 6 or 8 years. And so you know, think of that compounded if you're a very proactive person and you're really trying to go out and find a good fit with a doctor, that's a lot of time and energy and emotional expenditure on your part.
Very intense journey. For me, just to be clear, are there any other symptoms that we should look out for other than the pain and maybe bowel symptoms
and the loss of blood?
Yeah. A really common one definitely was something that I experienced that is very related to what you all do is pain during sexual intercourse. Whenever I look at lists of symptoms, that's one that is always up there and is, again, very common across women who are diagnosed with endometriosis. For me, that looked like, even again, as early as 12, when I first learned how to insert a tampon, it was excruciating. And I just thought, oh, this is because I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm having to do this all alone. You know, it wasn't like, you know, something that me and my mom did together or that my mom taught me how to do or anything like that. And so I just thought, I'm doing it wrong. I must be stupid. And like, I don't really know how to do this, or I don't know how my anatomy works. Carried through all the way to when I became sexually active, same thing. Like, I just thought, oh, it's, you know, I just don't know what's going on. And that's just how it is. Either that hurts this bad for everyone, or I'm just doing something wrong. And I think that's a unfortunately fairly common message that a lot of people get in trying to navigate this themselves.
Going back to also what you were saying about the medical system and the healthcare system, it's also quite unfortunate that like a lot of doctors, you know, of course they have their professionals and what they do, but it's also siloed. Everyone's doing their own thing. And like, I myself have gone through so many issues in my life. I have autoimmune problems, but it's not specific to what. I was diagnosed partially with a bit of lupus, but final diagnosis was not lupus. But they were like, yeah, you have some autoimmune issues, but we're not sure what. And so I've always had symptoms of like foggy brain, stomach. I always have stomach aches. Like my husband, he would tell me, I'm so used to you telling me you have stomach aches every single day that like, if you don't tell me you have stomach ache one day, it's not normal. Like there has been so many ways and so many different doctors I go to see, and no one can give me a proper answer. And I think not being able to have an answer or not having someone that can look at you holistically is the most, I would say, like defeating feeling ever. And I'm sure a lot of women, as well as men, like who would go through some sort of health experiences that they're going through, would feel this way as well. Speaking of medical systems as well, and have you seen both Western medicine or Chinese medicine as well for your endometriosis?
That's awesome that you brought that up. I tell a lot of people this story, but for me, it took many years. Like I said, I really started complaining and seeing a doctor about this when I was 16, but I'd probably been having symptoms since I was 12, and I was finally diagnosed when I was 20 years old. So took a long time, you know, saw a lot of people, and just like a lot of hours went into figuring out what was going on. And I contrast that with, I was living in Beijing, and because I was in Beijing, was like, all right, I'm going to go see a TCM doctor and like, you know, really just experience life in China for all it has to offer. I was sitting with this woman for maybe 5 minutes explaining through a translator. So not even like, you know, having a fluid conversation, but explaining through a translator some of what I was experiencing, which at that point was really bad constipation and really bad insomnia. She felt my pulse, looked at my tongue, and then, like I said, we had a conversation for 5 minutes. And at the end of that, she was like, "You have endometriosis."
Wow. And
wow.
I hadn't told her yet. That is so powerful that in that short amount of time, you know, really sitting with this woman and having her feel a lot of my energy and like really get a sense of me instead of just like playing the matching game of, oh, you said the right word, you know, kind of the way a resume filter would work on like LinkedIn or something. You know, she really felt my essence and like listened to my story. And like I said, you know, looked at a few indicators on my body and then nailed it. I will admit, you know, even my Chinese family members, a lot of them, once I was diagnosed, were like, oh yeah, you should really try acupuncture for your pain, or you should, you know, start seeing a Chinese medicine doctor. here in New York. And I was like, yeah, that's woo-woo. And it's like, not going to work. This is a real thing. I just got out of the ICU and you're telling me to like, go try acupuncture. No, thank you. But when I got to Beijing and had that experience, I'm like, oh yeah, I should have been approaching this holistically all along. And I regret that I didn't.
I mean, Chinese medicine has been also around for what, thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
Actually, I was talking to Simona this morning as we're on our way here to film this podcast, that when I was looking into research, they said that one of the causes could be from the flowing back of the blood. And also reminds me of every yoga session I go to, whenever there's like a back bend or you have to be on your hands and go reverse, the yoga instructor will always say, hey, if you're on your menstrual cycle, don't do it because you don't want your blood to flow back. And I was like linking the two together, like, you know, yoga as a practice for thousands of years, as well as Chinese medicine, you know, we oftentimes, like modern day people, discount all these things that have been passed down for thousands and thousands of generations. And we're now like almost looking into like, oh, modern medicine, because they said this, Chinese medicine said this, you kind of discount what has been passed down for generations and just look at what's
happening. Yeah, I mean, it reminds you of how much our medical system, again, at least in the US, is oriented around being able to prescribe you with a drug. And, you know, if there is no drug, like especially in the case of endometriosis, there's a lot of hormone suppression therapies that have come about. And trust me, I've tried them all. But there is no one, you know, kind of knockout drug that is like the go-to prescription. And because of that, that's also like it disincentivizes your caretaker from really getting you on the right care plan. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Very regretful, like I said, that I didn't listen to some of my wise family members who had experiences with Chinese medicine.
But the thing is, they never explained why. My mom was the same. And now looking back, it actually makes all sense. Like, oh, drink warm water or take these herbs or... But they don't give an explanation why. They actually don't know themselves why, but she the knowledge was passed on, but they never told her why. So she tells me, don't eat ice cream when you're on your period, or drink this herbal tea when you have a headache, but you don't know why. So you're like, take an Advil or take a paracetamol, drink this weird tea. Whereas now in hindsight, I'm like, and also after having lived in China, Actually, I think I got to recognize that it all has a benefit. It actually isn't that crazy. Are there any other TCM practices that you have tested out and that worked for you?
I don't know if I mentioned this in the beginning, but I had a hysterectomy last year and at the same time had a big endometriosis excision surgery, which is, you know, just like surgery is the gold standard way to diagnose it. Surgery, this excision surgery specifically, is the major way that people find a lot of relief. There's so many different theories out there, everything from like, oh, getting pregnant cures it, to, you know, different, you know, hormone suppression things that you will try. But in my experience, the only thing that really brought me tangible relief was having this surgery last year. Mm-hmm. And around the same time when I was recovering from that surgery, a friend introduced me to something called Bagua, which is not Chinese medicine. It's more a form of martial arts. And I guess the English translation would be like an internal martial arts. But I've been doing that pretty much every day for almost 10 months now. And it is really powerful. In the beginning, I thought it was crazy. Like, okay, these people are standing, staring at a wall. What are they doing? Moving really slow. It's like, you know, 100 times slower than even Tai Chi. Like it's very much, you know, feeling the inner workings of your body and really feeling your own energy. But as I went a few months into it, I started to realize that I could feel certain organs like performing their function, or I could feel, whereas maybe before I would have said, oh yeah, my stomach hurts, or like my whole abdomen area hurts, or my whole pelvic region hurts. It now was, I had a level of like intuition, I would call it, where I could now acutely point to, oh, this is what's happening and that's what's causing me pain. Or sometimes I get so into this state where I can like take a breath And somehow that breath will go to wherever the pain is and like undoes it. So like, let's say, for instance, I have a stiff neck. I will really think about that and like really focus on it through my Bagua practice, take a deep breath, and my back will adjust like on the level of as if I visited the chiropractor and they put you on that table that like, you know, causes your back to make all those funny noises. Like I can really do that just by thinking about it and breathing into it. It's like, if you had told me this 2 years ago, I would have thought you were nuts. And now I'm like a full believer that, you know, really honing your own body intuition is a very, very powerful practice.
Sounds amazing.
Very interesting. Yeah.
I've done acupuncture. I've done dry needling. I've done moxi. I've done, a lot of different Chinese medicine practices, like kind of in conjunction with Bagua. But yeah, it's really been led by just me learning how to listen to my own body.
Going through this entire experience, how did it impact it, your life and your life with your partner?
I will tackle it in three parts. I think the biggest one, the one that's most top of mind for me, is just emotional. It's really based out of my relationship with myself. Again, I guess building off of that own body intuition. I had a really hard time because I had been trained through the years not to talk about how I was feeling. And, you know, and a lot of times was punished for it, not physically, but like punished by the way culture and society operates, or like punished emotionally. Had always just been trained to think that this is a lonely thing that only you are experiencing, and no matter what you say, no one is going to understand how you feel, so you might as well just shut up and, you know, and not make other people feel awkward. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of that bled into my relationship, my emotional relationship with my partner, because that kind of, you know, can permeate into other areas of your life when it, you know, when it is acceptable to talk about how you feel, or it is more, you're invited more to talk about how you feel. It's something that I constantly struggle with because I'm just not used to doing it. And I think my experience with endometriosis is not fully to blame for that, but it is a big part of the reason for why I am that way. And so that has been difficult, but it's a journey that I'm constantly working on and that we're constantly on together. And I am very fortunate that I'm with someone who at least understands that that dynamic exists and is patient and encouraging with me to continue to work on it. The second part is the physical part. There are times when, especially recovering from surgery, I had my cervix removed. And so like, you know, even just structurally healing and, you know, not puncturing things that, you know, could be very life-threatening and things like that is a journey that we're constantly having to navigate and to understand, you know, what's okay at what times and what's going to cause pain and what's going to potentially be harmful. And so, you know, what should we be mindful of? I think it brings a lot more thinking into physical intimacy. So, you know, whereas we're taught by movies that physical intimacy is like, oh, it just happens. And like someone sweeps you off your feet and you just like, you know, go have an amazing time. And then you wake up holding hands and, you know, no one's gone to the bathroom or like, you know, really done anything during this whole perfect scene. It never really works out that way. And I think introducing a lot of like logistical thinking that's running in the background of, you know, wanting to promote that perfect vision is a very complicated thing to navigate. And then I think the distant third, I won't even call it, you know, just like the straight up third reason, but the distant third reason, at least in my relationship, has been the family planning aspects. You're expected to get married and, you know, have children pretty quickly afterward. Whether or not that's like, you know, really something that you want or that your partner wants, I think that there's just an inherent pressure regardless that is placed on you as, you know, by society. And for us, again, I'm really lucky that I think I spent a lot of my, especially in my 20s before I, you know, met my now husband, worried about like, oh, am I going to meet someone that like is going to fall in love with me and like maybe would want to get married to me? But then like, how do I tell them that like I probably can't have kids? And, you know, I just I was always kind of advancing years at a time whenever I would like go on a first date, let's say, with someone. I'm really lucky that I'm with someone who we had that conversation very early on in our relationship and, you know, definitely had that conversation well before we thought about getting married. And there was no kind of like anxiety around, well, what will he think when I break this news to him? But even still, I feel pressure all the time. And a surprising thing that I thought after I had a hysterectomy, especially, I had always had this kind of like ominous part of my diagnosis when I woke up from surgery when I was 20 was, hey, the state that you're, so endometriosis is graded in stages 1 through 4. And so the person who, the OBGYN who was actually in my surgery and made the diagnosis said, you know, you have something called endometriosis, yours is stage 4. And actually in my clinical experience, yours is the worst that I've ever seen. It's, you know, it's literally everywhere in your abdomen. And so it is very likely that you will not be able to have children. I was 20, like having kids was not something that I really had thought about up until that point in my life, but I had always lived with this little kind of like ominous nugget in the background. Because I had already digested that information years ago and internalized it, when it came time last year to really seriously consider having this hysterectomy, because I had, you know, had just reached my wit's end in terms of the pain that I could deal with and these symptoms, it was kind of a no-brainer. So I like read all the articles and, you know, like Lena Dunham very famously had a hysterectomy kind of earlier in life. And, you know, there's all these kind of expose pieces and op-eds that people had written about what goes into considering a decision of that size. But I felt a huge disconnect as I was like, this is a no-brainer. I don't think I can live another day feeling the way that I feel. So why would I not go do this thing? Like, because I'm worried that, you know, one day I won't be able to have kids and my husband will leave me. Like that wasn't something that I was considering. And so it was a pretty, not a rash decision, but it was a quick decision on my part to go through with that surgery. I still didn't realize, severely underestimated that afterwards, how much my body still needed to grieve. Oh, my mind knew from age 20, okay, this is, kids are, you know, you carrying your own kids, I should say, is not in your future. Still for months after that was like going through this weird, just state of mourning of you know, maybe loss of like a little bit of my identity or, you know, what I had envisioned for myself in the future, even without knowing it. And so that was a very big part of my previous year's healing process.
Really moving what you have shared, I have to say, it's like giving me goosebumps, and just being able to say and hear someone say that out loud, it's quite, I would say, touching, because like, I would say like even from the journey of like period to fertility, I think it's such a sensitive topic and such a topic that's like personal to each and every single one of us that I feel like mm-hmm. a lot of women, we go through it every single day. Like right now we're doing our AMH level tomorrow, but at the same mm-hmm. time we're like, do we want children? Do we not want children? There is still some, like that question
pressure and role, yeah.
And the pressure also comes from the outside stimulus, people telling you, oh, you're a woman, you should have children. Chinese parents, 25,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And then you mm-hmm. see friends around you who have it, but at the same time, like we're not having enough conversation about like what if not. And there's also a path for what if not as well. And it's yeah. oftentimes portrayed as, oh, you should, versus like, oh, if not, it's also fine. And everyone has their own journey, but that journey needs to be heroed and highlighted as well as like, just like your story, like more people need to hear about it versus feeling like, I'm, it's just me, it's my problem. It's like, it's my issue and I'm alone in this journey. So yeah, like mm-hmm. for sharing that story is super moving.
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. but so yeah. makes us think there are a lot of things we cruise through life and think that everything is possible and everything comes later, but just with these type of conversations that realize get things checked out or try to feel what you're really feeling, don't dismiss it. And also if other people are dismissing it, you know what you're feeling. It's yeah, I think it's very powerful to hear this from you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I mean, I'm not shy about saying this, but something that I've been dealing with mostly in therapy over the last year that again, wasn't expected by me. I don't think I acknowledged or realized before having this big surgery and now like knowing what it feels like to go multiple days in a row without pain. I didn't realize going into that how much I call it like my operating system, but how much my life's operating system was oriented around this disease and oriented around my experience of it and my symptoms and everything from like, you know, when I had also a lot of disease that was like traumatizing my bladder. And so I have really embarrassing problems with incontinence a lot of times. And, you know, it comes in waves. And so I'll have months when I deal with it and then months when I'm, you know, perfectly normal. But on the months when I'm dealing with it, especially like even just like the thought process of walking into every single space and like needing to know where the bathroom is and like planning your exit route or like carrying an extra pair of underwear with you everywhere and like trying to hide it. Or there's even been people who like colleagues, because we all work together, colleagues that you guys probably know who I've like called and been like, do you have extra pants in your office? Like, can you please bring them to the bathroom now? And, or like needing rides home, just all these little logistical things that are taking up so much of your mental energy. It's really similar to when I moved back to the US from China. I felt like a weird detachment, like an atrophy in my brain muscle, because I had, you know, been for 3 years like trying to like translate and taking in these different inputs and, you know, then trying to think in my language and then retranslate to, you know, respond to people or to read people's body language. And learning how to do that and having your brain really operate oriented around that for so long is a very jolting experience once you don't have it. And my endometriosis is the same in a lot of ways, except it had been many more years than just three of me running my life and my brain really oriented around navigating the different symptoms I was having or navigating the different feelings I was having. Doing that, it's almost like my brain in the very beginning, like, didn't know what to do.
You're now entirely symptom free. No more pains, no more brain loss. Is that with the history?
I am totally, like, my pain is at a very, very low level, which is amazing. I actually have worse incontinence symptoms because literally during the surgery, they took my bladder out, like, scraped all the stuff off and then put it back in. And so I think, you know, I'm not well versed in talking with the urologist. I only got to actually meet the person once, but as I understand it, just like even the trauma of doing that and then putting the organ back in, like the organ like kind of needs to get settled again and needs to learn how to work again. And it just had a lot of pressure on it. So I actually have more incontinence symptoms than I did before, but trust me, as embarrassing as they are, I would trade it every day and twice on Sunday again to, you know, not have the pain that I was dealing with.
I have another friend who had endometriosis, and I think she was not in stage 4. I actually talked to you about it last year, I think, when she had it, and we had a little conversation on Instagram, but her doctor told her that the best way for her to get rid of the endometriosis was to actually have another, she already has a baby, to have another baby. Mm.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that. I'm fortunate that the doctor, the OBGYN that I started seeing after my first two surgeries when I was 20 was always really upfront about, she would say, listen, I deliver babies, I do other things, like I do not think about endometriosis all day, every day. So when it gets really bad for you, I will find you the right person to navigate that. But I also, you know, am just well read on the topic. And because you're my patient, I'm constantly doing research. And yes, one thing that I've heard and read and, you know, comes up in certain circles is that sometimes getting pregnant can drastically reduce your symptoms. I don't think she said cure, because I think that would be pretty wild from a scientific standpoint for her to say, but I do remember her saying that, yeah, a lot of people do say and do experience a reduction in symptoms when that happens. I will say that when I froze my eggs when I was 30, shortly before I moved to China, I had some relief in like the final month of prepping, you know, doing all the hormones and growing the eggs in your body. And then for maybe 6 months after the extraction, I had quite a bit of relief. What may bring relief to one person doesn't mean that that is a standard, because unfortunately, there still aren't that many standards in how this is treated and what brings people relief.
We'd like to ask you two last questions. Do you think your experiences growing up as like your mixed child, half Asian, half Black, and growing up in America, but also have a lot of Chinese heritage in you, do you think growing up as that has given you some sort of different experiences when you're learning about your sexuality and your experiences with your body?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would describe it as different, because I can't speak to what any other cultural experience would feel like, but I do know that it made things very awkward for me. And I think in terms of especially sexual exploration, I've just realized that I'm a very late bloomer in comparison to a lot of my friends, where I think the cultural aspects of it, I just like wanted to ignore or hide for as long as possible. And I wish I had found things like Bagua and, like we said earlier, you know, traditional Chinese medicine, but even just like understanding and acknowledging feelings that I was having or being able to talk about them. I'm fortunate that I have really great friends who I now talk about all of this stuff with. And I know that those same friends would have, you know, willingly loved to talk about it with me much earlier in our lives. It wasn't something I was ready for yet. But a great example is a friend, someone that I grew up with literally from kindergarten that I'm still friends with now. We see the same pelvic floor physical therapist. She has a different diagnosis than I had with endometriosis, but we both have found relief and formed a really great relationship with this one physical therapist who's helped us tremendously. I really wish that that had been a part of my culture earlier on. I think it would have saved me a lot of emotional distress for sure.
One recommendation of piece of advice that you could give to all women out there, what would that be?
You have to be the quarterback or in the driver's seat of your own experience. And for me, that's looked like having a board of directors level grouping of different seats who serve different types of expertise. But I've had to learn to cobble that together and form that board myself. And I am the person who sets the agenda and does the progress checks and connects even sometimes one specialist to another, because, you know, something that one said reminded me of, you know, something I'm trying to figure out with another person. You have to be really the person who is captaining all of that. It's just not how our systems are set up, especially if you're like pulling from East and West modalities and practices. It's not how our system is set up for any one of those specialists to be the advocate who helps to coordinate all the rest. It's just, that's just not how we operate as a society. So I wish that I had learned that lesson much earlier. And I, you know, when I talk to people, even if they're just having, you know, a symptom, random symptom that they want to explore more, I try to encourage everyone to kind of take that posture up as quickly as you can.
Sounds like we should all start a Google spreadsheet with all of our different, like, different practitioners, different doctors that we're seeing. And then we have one consolidated page for the doctors we go see. And every time you go see them, be like, here, this is all my reports from different doctors that you see here, all the tests.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and yeah, that's something that I love to share too. It just says like the footnote to that. I see a pelvic floor physical therapist, which, you know, you may or may not have heard of before. I certainly, you know, took me several years to even get comfortable with the idea of doing that. I see a somatic psychotherapist, so someone who really specializes in the body mind and in, you know, really feeling into the language of your body and what is your body trying to tell you, and what, you know, what those experiences and sometimes those symptoms or those sensations are telling you about your emotional processes. I have, of course, my OBGYN, but my OBGYN actually referred me to go see a physiatrist, someone who specializes more in the experience of pain specifically. And I see very specifically a physiatrist who resides in a pelvic pain practice, because they are going to think about things completely differently from, you know, I think a lot of physiatrists are oriented around back pain because that's something that a lot of men experience, or, you know, just a lot of people in general, there's a lot of money in that. So really getting to the right person who's seeing patients who are having similar experiences to mine was really important to me. And then, yeah, I, you know, there are various Eastern modalities that I take part in as well, but the Bagua teacher who I learned from also does Tui Na, like Chinese medical massage. And so I see him a lot. So I've had to, yeah, put together this kind of portfolio of people. And then the surgeon who did my excision and my hysterectomy is a Chinese American woman. I think her father was a very prominent OBGYN surgeon in China. She kind of saw the life-changing effects that has on women and decided that that was her life's purpose. And all she does is endometriosis excision surgery. So also the thing that I stress with a lot of people, if it comes to that, especially Winchi for you, you're not going to go to a surgeon who, you know, delivers babies 95% of the time. And then, you know, maybe a few times in the year when they have time for it, will do other types of surgery. You really want to see someone who does this very specific thing all day, every day, because they have seen the most and experienced the most. And so that was really important for me, but there aren't that many of them.
Yes. And I think what you also mentioned before is finding the right person to treat you takes a lot of time, and it takes maybe even years to find the right person. I think I'm going a little bit through the same process of trying different doctors to see what works best and who can help me the best. So I think that also echoes back to Eden and her spreadsheets. And sometimes it's a lot easier if people can just share, who are you seeing and what can that person treat and how's your experience with this person? And we review restaurants, but we don't really review doctors. And sometimes it's great to, you know, have a platform where you could just read up about a doctor's bio and for people to get a better match on where to get help.
I think we're coming to an end of the podcast itself. There's so many, it's so many little pieces of gold nuggets that you gave us, and also pieces of advice. Thank you so much for shedding more light on endometriosis. And if people have any more questions, can they actually also DM you about it or find more information?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, thank you for your thoughtful questions. This is, you know, I always enjoy talking about it because I feel not enough people do. And so I'm impressed and happy that you reached out and that you asked such good pointed questions. I definitely am always happy to talk more about my experience or to listen if, you know, even if someone just needs to vent, because it is a really frustrating existence. And so my Instagram handle is Stacy, STACYSTP. And I'm probably most responsive on there. I would love to hear from people if this is something you're experiencing or you think you're experiencing or you know someone. I always love talking about it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Stacy.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you all again. I miss you.
Yeah.